Welcome back to the Access to Education podcast, where we talk about all things having to do with learning challenges and learning disabilities. Being organized can be a game changer for anyone. For myself in particular, I find I'm calmer. I'm more ready to take on the day when my room and my workspace is clear of clutter. But for some, being organized and clutterless can feel really hard. For some with ADHD, for example, it can feel overwhelming to know where to start and how to even begin to get organized. On the podcast today, I have Denise. She is a professional organizer who supports those who find it hard to be organized. She is a professional organizer and a mother of two children with exceptionalities. She understands the needs of families and the children within that family with learning challenges from personal experience. This makes her uniquely qualified to have a conversation with us today about how to support those with learning differences to be organized. More than that, she has a wealth of knowledge about working with families as she understands the challenges we face daily. Denise, welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
I love being organized. My husband says I tidy too often, so I'm excited for this conversation because I'll talk about organizing anytime. But when you've got kiddos and family members who are not on the same wavelength with organizing, it's challenging.
It is. And some people have their different, like you have one organizing style. There's very much different organizing styles. So you may have one organizing style and somebody in your household could have a very different organizing style. But it's about compromise and finding, you know, where you can meet in the middle.
In the middle, there's an interesting one. So can you, I mean, I talked about it ever so briefly and feel free to share what you want, but you know, you have children with exceptionalities. So can you share a little bit about your family and kind of what that looks like for you?
Sure. So both my children, my daughter is now 23 and she was diagnosed with ADHD and LDs right back in JK at our very first parent teacher interview. So that was quite the experience to, you know, go in for your parent-teacher interview. You know, you're really excited to meet the teacher. And all of a sudden she sits you down and goes, I think you need to take your daughter to the doctor. I'm not a doctor, but you need to take your daughter to the doctor and ask them to investigate ADHD. So it was quite not what I was expecting as a parent at first interview. But that said, it took a long time to actually get support for her. I think it wasn't until grade four that I finally was able to push the school to get them on board for team meetings and, you know, additional support. And it wasn't until we investigated our own private assessment to get an official diagnosis for her that we could get things moving. Now, on that said, I'm on the other spectrum with my son, who is 14, who is high functioning autism under the new classification of the DMS-5. And he as well was late diagnosed because he's so high functioning that we didn't get him diagnosed or even looked at until grade four either, because they kept brushing it off because he was also premature by 2 months. So a lot of the delays and stuff we found with my son were related to, they said, prematurity and stuff like that at the young age that you would have thought they would be looking for the autism. They pushed it off as all being premature. You know, living on two ends of the spectrum, I'm here stuck in the middle and I'm trying to do the balancing beam with Beau because they are both very different. And me being the organizer, and I find that I'm the captain in the house and I'm kind of just spearheading everything, really.
Now, it must be hard because I would think the ADHDer and the ASDer are probably different in the way they want things organized. Mm-hmm. And then you have your own theory, right? So again, it's that, to your point of like, you got to meet in the middle somehow in terms of how it's going to get done. I will say, I've now said to my husband, the kitchen is mine to organize. You can organize your shed or your car or your whatever. Don't muck with the organizational system I have in my kitchen. Just don't touch
it. That's right.
But one of my ADHDers has started cooking. So he wants to be in the kitchen, which is fine. You know, he's 10 and he's learning to cook himself an egg. I think we go through about 6 eggs a day now. Fine. Mm-hmm. He's doing it himself. But he puts things back in places that for me drives me bananas, because it makes sense for him because it's all the egg stuff he has in the same, but I keep them sort of separate because the frying pans go in one drawer. And anyway, man. Yeah. Sharing the organizational space with an ADHDer who thinks very differently to me does not. Well, anyway, so what got you into wanting to be an organizer, and how did your children's exceptionalities influence the way you work with families?
Very differently. So my background is actually in medical. So I was in the medical background for about 18 years working alongside doctors and physicians. That's where my organizing journey really started, was organizing the clinics, creating systems there. And then it just, through my own life experience of having children on the spectrum and doing that, I started to realize that some of these physicians I was working with also had families. And you would think that a physician with all their education and resources and abilities to find the information would be able to help their own families, but that's not so much the case. So when they realized that I was able to help them in certain ways, they would ask questions, I was able to give them resources or help and guidance. It just sort of formulated that way. And I was able to then work with families, you know, based on my own experience, my education, and then connecting the two together. But I find that when you have a level of personal experience, it allows you to relate with those families a little differently, because you honestly can say, I know what you're going through. It's not just somebody saying, I've read this textbook or I've taken this class and I know what you can do. You've got that more, you can connect with them more on a personal level, I think, very much so.
I think when you're working with neurodiverse families, there's a level of intimacy when you allow someone else into your family.
For sure.
Because you have to be open and honest about who your children are, where you are as a family, where you are as a parent in terms of understanding your child. Because I don't always get my kids every day. They change the rules on me. I feel like at least once a day, I think I figured it out. And I'm like, oh no, wait, that thing I did yesterday is not working today. So when you bring in, I think, a professional like yourself or like me as an educational consultant, you're really being vulnerable as a family to say, hey, we need help here. And I think you're right. I think having that personal understanding to really be able to empathize with how hard it is to navigate systems, to get organized, to understand systems. I think it's so hard to let someone else in, for sure. Mm-hmm. So when you're working with families, do you tend to just work with the adults in the home, or do you pull the children in, or does it age dependent? Like, how does that work?
So it's kind of both. You're working with both, because you're creating new systems and you're helping everybody understand where everybody is fitting into this sort of, I like to call it a puzzle. Where does everybody fit in this family puzzle? And how is everybody going to contribute to the overall organization within the home, right? And one of the things that I think, you know, non-neurodiverse parents might have with their children is, why can't they just do it? Why can't they just put their shoes away? Why can't they just hang up their clothes? Why? Like, they don't understand that they have a different way of thinking it through. And you might say, okay, here's one, two, but they're seeing seven steps to do that. And they just like, oh, I don't know how to do that. I can't, you know, because we don't consciously think about taking off the shoe, pulling it off my foot, then picking it up, then putting it on the rack. It's just an automatic thing that you do. Whereas children that are struggling, they are thinking every single step of it through, and it just overwhelms them.
And I'm now thinking, as you're talking about the shoes, I'm like, every day I come home from work and there are three pairs of shoes as I open the door, and I'm thinking, why can't they just put the shoes? But of course, you know why they can't do it? I'm thinking about it now. Because in order to put the shoes on the shoe rack, they have to close the front door completely to access said spot. So the reason they're not doing it is because it's an extra step. They have to close the door, which they do anyway, but like, to take off the shoes first. But it's just the way our front hall is created. Exactly. I can't do anything about it.
Exactly. And that's one of the biggest things that I try to explain to families, is there has to be no barriers. There can't be anything in the way or any extra steps involved to doing that task, no matter what it is.
Yeah. And it's the added task. There may be lots of families listening, and perhaps you have this happen in your family. My children will put so I bought one of those laundry organizers. So there's four different hampers so that they're already color sorted for me, because that saves me time. But what our children don't do is turn the pants right side out again when they take them off. So we've actually started handing them back to them washed, folded, but inside out. And the comment has been, well, why can't you turn them out right side out? And I was like, because it takes me 20 minutes to turn. I have three children times five pairs of pants. That's a lot of time. So it's starting to shift. My eldest is starting to get it. My middle kid doesn't care. He just hangs them in his closet. And then when he wears them for school, he'll turn them out. But yeah, it's true. It's the extra step, right? Of
My favorite is the hair tie tied to the shirt to make it tighter at the waist. And then they just take it off and throw it in the wash. And then when it comes out of the wash and you didn't realize it was there and you dried it and you're like, what is this knot? And you go and there's a hair tie. And I don't even untake it. I take it and I fold it like that and I give it back to my daughter going, and she's like, oh, it's all wrinkled. How am I going to wear this? You put it in the laundry that way.
Right. Yes. And I think some of it, right, when it comes to organizing and being organized is learning through experience, right? So she doesn't like the shirt coming out wrinkled. At some point, she's going to learn to, like, hopefully take the hair tie off, right? I mean, it's those sorts of things. What's the biggest struggle that you see that families seem to face when it comes to organizing? And I'm thinking of sort of two sorts of families, either the families like mine where the parents are neurodiverse as well as the children. So we're a group of neurodiverse people who all have very different ways of doing things and organizing things, but also for those families for whom maybe the parents or one parent is and one parent isn't compared to the children. Like, what is the hardest thing about getting organized for families when there are so many different ways of thinking?
The expectations. Mm-hmm. There's the huge barrier of the expectations because everybody has different expectations. For a non-neurodiverse parent looking at a child or another partner, they have the expectation that if you're of an age, you should be able to do X, Y, and Z. And that's not the case. It has nothing to do with age. A lot of it has to do with not understanding a learning style. Is the particular person visual? Are they kinesthetic? Are they, you know, auditory? How do they need to get their instructions in order to know how to properly do it? Do you need to show them how to do it? We can't just assume that they know it. Breaking things down, people don't break things down often enough. They kind of just do it all in a hole, as opposed to helping them break it down into the steps like a recipe. Right? You can't just get a souffle out of the oven. You know, like there's certain steps you have to take in order to get it to that point, right? Breaking it down for sure into the different steps so that they see it. One of the things I like to try and go back to, you know, when children are infants and, you know, you don't realize that there's something going on and there's a diagnosis later, you have to remember that through infancy and, you know, to a young child, you've been teaching them how to brush their teeth. You've been walking them through the steps. You've been, you know, helping them get dressed. You walk them through the steps. And then you assume they just know it, right? Whereas when you stop giving them that help, you're like, why can't you do this? You've been doing this all your life. It's because you've been there to assist them or you've guided them. So when you want to, you know, give them instructions, it's kind of like, here are the steps. You do this, then you're going to do this. Then you're going to do this. Then you're going to do this. And when they see it enough on their own so that they're seeing the pattern that needs to happen, they're then able to retain it. But having that visual somewhere for them that if they do get stuck, it's just a quick glance. Oh yeah, I'm here. I need to go to the next step kind of thing, but definitely expectations.
As you're talking, I'm thinking, okay, when I think of an organizer, I think of someone who's going to come into my home. You're going to dump all my drawers out and you're going to put it all back in so that it makes sense. But do you also to some extent help families with the organizing of, like, say, a calendar or a filing system, or like, because I think of like the Home Edit, for example, if you've seen it on Netflix, right? It's very much like they go to the pantry and they figure it all out. But I don't really see them helping families figure out how to manage their calendar, for example, or how to manage the files. I mean, for those of us with neurodiverse children, we know that their files are quite large. We get assessments that come in all the time. There's doctor's notes. There's things we need to keep track of that it's not easy to keep track of. In my own website, I've created an IEP binder organizer because just keeping individual education plans organized is right. It's key, especially as the children get older and you get into more and more meetings and you need to have all that information to back up why you want what you want. But can you help families with, say, organizing calendars and like filing systems? Like, I'm thinking of your medical work. So you must be able to help with that as well.
Absolutely. And I think that that's sometimes people call you in for one aspect. There's like, can you help me organize my closet? And then you get there, you start doing kind of a walkthrough and an assessment with the client. And then you realize it really isn't about the closet. It's about not being able to find what they need to get out the door on time because their schedule is more chaotic than their closet. So you kind of look at the, you know, you look at the schedule and it's like, okay, well, how much time are you giving yourself in the morning to actually get ready? You know, and then we evaluate the timing that they're using. We evaluate the cues that they're using in the morning to get up on time, have their breakfast on time. Then how much time are you allowing to get dressed and find that clothing or whatever it is you want to wear for the day? So it's kind of twofold, like, you know, and you really have to figure out from the client, you know, through conversation. They might think they want one thing, but in reality, you're pulling out a whole bunch of other things. And it comes to, you know, when you come in, you're not just putting down all those papers. Where are they going? Where are we putting them? And one of the things I've try to, you know, work with the client with is that when you come in and you have important papers that need to go away, it's kind of, I'm not putting those important pieces of paper down because I know if I put them down, they're gone. I'm going to go put those important pieces of paper away now. Right. And it's kind of, that's the first, let's put those papers away first, then come back to maybe doing the dishes. Because if you don't take care of the important things first, they're going to get lost in the unimportant things.
Yeah. And then you're stuck trying to find that stuff because it's floated off or it's, you know, under 12 other books or it just gets, I have a habit of when I tidy my main floor, I take everything from the living room and move it into the kitchen so that then from there I've got everything in one spot and I can kind of be like, okay, no, that needs to go here or there. My favorite, and it's TikTok is an amazing thing over pandemic. I've run into TikTok more than I like to admit, but it's been very affirming for me to know that it's not my house where I put things on the bottom of the stairs for them to go upstairs, thinking someone will grab them on the way up. Nobody grabs them on the way up. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to make like a little elevator system. Like maybe that's my $1 million idea is the mother elevator, right? Just a little, like little track. And it just, it's like one of those like wheelchair, you know, stair chairs, wheelchair things. Take it up to the top. It's the little things in life, right? But yeah, it's true. When you walk in the door with those important documents, and I'm guilty of not doing it too, and then I panic because I can't find the thing. My husband's actually gotten me one of those Apple locators on my keychain because, well, my children used to walk away with my keys all the time, but now I come home and I don't have a designated spot for my car keys because I don't want to leave them at the front door because that makes me nervous.
Yeah.
Then I don't know where to put them.
So I'll give you a tip for the keys.
Yes.
I had the same problem with my daughter always losing her house key. And then in the morning, she doesn't know where it is. And we're frantically looking because she's got to come home on her own trying to find the key. So what we do is when you walk into the house, they're not at the front door. That's as well for safety because you don't want people to see your keys hanging there. So inside my kitchen, when you first walk in, I have a spot on the wall and everybody has a hook and it goes inside and they're always hanging in the kitchen over the light switch. And if they're not in the kitchen over the light switch, we know somebody's missing keys.
Somebody's missing keys. Yeah. But I need to find a more permanent location, but the little key finder is quite handy.
I'd love to know where you find your keys sometime.
Under couch cushions, in random closets, under a mess on my desk.
And have you wondered how they got there?
Yeah, it's generally because I'm walking in with a handful of stuff from children at the end of the day and I dump it all in one location. Mm-hmm. Generally, we've got two red chairs in our living room and that's generally where I dump everything. So usually they're under one of those cushions, tends to be where they are.
Okay.
But this is because nobody helps me carry anything in from the car. So I have, you know, my work bag, her bag, my like whatever. And in the winter, you've got all the gear and then it, anyway.
Everywhere.
Yeah. So see, anybody listening, I'm not as organized as I like to think I am.
Now, you know, you have to remember too, organizing is very subjective to the individual, right? So a level of organized that I might feel or a level of organized that you might feel are going to be very different. And that's one of the things when working with families, we have to remember there's no right or wrong way to organize. It's what's going to work and make you feel more successful to doing the task that you want to do.
It's true. Yeah. My husband has a very different sense of organizing. But it's funny though, I'll tell you, between my kids, so two out of the three are identified ADHD, anxiety, LDs. My eldest, who is the combined ADHDer, I would say he is more organized and more focused on putting, but only with certain things. So like Lego, very organized. Mm-hmm. Books, organized by color, super organized. My middle kiddo, inattentive. Stuff is everywhere and anywhere. I mean, the trail of clothes, like maybe makes it into the laundry hamper. Mm-hmm. The backpack there's a hook right inside the front door. Like literally it's the first thing they look at when they walk in the front door. Super easy. Never, never, ever, ever. Lunchbox never makes it into the kitchen, right?
Yeah.
Whereas my eldest and my daughter, and whether this is a boy girl difference, who knows, or if she's just following me because I'm constantly cleaning and reorganizing because that's what makes me feel better when I'm anxious. I like to clean. I like to tidy. My husband will just get out of my way when he knows I'm stressed. But she is constantly reorganizing her things. Mm-hmm. So she'll pull all her books out of her bookshelf and she'll get rid of the books she doesn't want anymore. And then she'll put them all back into an order. And it's very interesting to watch how different kids can be. Mm-hmm. It's kind of fun. So if someone is looking for an organizer to work with their family and they're a neurodiverse family, where do they start? How do they find out who to work with? What are the important factors for them to consider?
So one would be finding one of the associations they can reach out through is the Professional Organizers in Canada, and they can go and they can do a search for people that work with families with ADHD. And one of the things when they're looking at individual profiles for organizers is try to see if in there it's mentioned, or at least pick a few of them and do your research, connect with them. I've loved in a way the new virtual, you know, sort of consult, because before you were just having a conversation with somebody and it wasn't until you got them on site that you got to a better feel for that person. Now you can do a virtual consultation and you can actually get to see them before they come to your home. You can feel a little bit more connected when you're having that face-to-face conversation with them, but really make sure you connect with them on some level. And don't think that they're going to come in and perform magic, because they really are working with the individual family. And if you don't know exactly, you know you need help, but you don't know exactly what you need help with, make sure you find somebody that's going to help walk you through what is it you're looking to have achieved? What is the long-term goal here? You know, is it just getting organized? Well, what does organized look like to you? Like you've got to really ask those questions, but finding somebody who has experience, somebody who has some education with ADHD are very key, and that you can connect with them. Because if you can't connect with them, they're not going to be able to help you.
Yeah. I think that connection piece too, right? Again, it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the intimacy of letting someone like that into your home to help you navigate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It takes a lot of trust for sure. So that's mm-hmm. important. So there might be families listening and saying, yeah, really great. But like, how do I even start? Where do I go to get organized? You know, what can I do on my own? Because I mean, some people are, you know, they just need a starting point. They need an idea to get started. Mm-hmm. So do you have maybe five sort of quick tips you could give families to at least start on their journey of being organized?
Okay. So one is, it sounds hard, but have a plan. Like what are you doing? What is it you're trying to organize? So if you're going to say, I want to organize my closet, what's the plan? What are you going to organize? Start small. So I want to go in and organize my closet, but there's a lot of steps to that. Are you going to empty the whole thing out? But really that's going to be overwhelming, because once you get everything out on the floor, you're going to be like, okay, well, that's great. Now what? Start small. So maybe start with, I'm going to go through my long sleeve shirts. Only look at your long sleeve shirts and go through the long sleeve shirts. Then when you feel successful and you've done that, move on to maybe the pants, right? So start in small little chunks and work your way up, because if you don't, you're going to get overwhelmed and you're just going to defeat the whole process. Maybe make it fun. You know, I always try to recommend to people that they play music or something that's upbeat to keep the momentum going, especially when they're doing a task that they already struggle with. So something that's going to help them, you know, get into like a rhythm of some sort is usually helpful. Have a buddy. So try not to do it alone, right? Because you haven't been able to do it alone now. Starting with a friend, or, you know, somebody that is going to be non-judgmental, that you can come in, you know, and maybe your sister, maybe, you know, a family member, come in and just help you. They don't even have to do anything. They just need to, like, somebody there. It's called like a social kind of organizing method. And I find that that works very well for some people, because there's just somebody else present to keep them anchored to that one particular small task they're going to start. And just remember always that there's no right way. There's no right or wrong way to organizing, right? And that's where I think a lot of people get stuck, that they think, oh, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way. And they overlook the fact that, you know, is this working for you? What is it that's not working? What part of this is not working for you? And then let's focus on that part of it. The whole system doesn't need to be reworked. Maybe just a part of the system or a part of the organizing needs to be done. But there is no right or wrong way. So don't think that every, you know, you've organized something and it's altogether wrong.
Great. Those are really good. I think starting small too, I think that's the biggest. I think sometimes I've certainly done it to myself where I'll say, okay, I'm going to do the whole kitchen today. And then by the end of the day, I've got it like 3/4 of the way done, but I don't have the energy or the stamina to finish the rest of it. Mm-hmm. It gets done eventually, but it does take longer and it feels like you haven't accomplished anything because it's not finished.
It's not finished. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like that idea of just taking it one piece at a time. When it comes to working with an organizer inside of your home, is there something in particular you should be looking for? I mean, I know we talked about kind of specific to ADHD, but I'm just thinking in general, when you're looking to work with an organizer, what are the things that are important when considering that?
I think, you know, again, it goes back to that connection, but I think if you're going to have somebody come into your home, maybe if it's working, you know, with yourself, you know, and you don't have other family members, you make sure that the timing works. Don't get pressured into a timing that doesn't work for you. Find somebody that can work with you when you're at your best. Some people work better in the morning. Some people work better in the afternoon. Some people don't like to work on the weekends, right? So really finding somebody that you feel can, you know, help you and work with you in the way you best learn and work with. If you find somebody that doesn't know anything about, you know, learning styles, how are they going to help you if you're only a visual learner or you're only an auditory learner? They have to be able to adapt to help teach you how to work with you in your home.
Yeah. True. Are there any good resources that you have or that you recommend generally to families when they're starting their organizing journey, whether it's websites or books or podcasts or anything?
Well, they're depending on what it is they're looking for organizing with, but I tend to find that when I'm working with families, you know, that have neurodiverse families, either with ADHD or anything else, there's a magazine, I'm not sure if you've heard of it, it's called Attitude Mag. So that's a big one that I send people. And I said, you know, you can register for free classes all the time. There's a lot of free classes and resources there. One of the ones that I tend to refer a lot of my families to is a woman out of the United States. Her name is Leslie Jozell. I don't know if you've heard of her. Her company name is Order Out of Chaos. And she, in my opinion, is like the guru for ADHD and helping families. And I've learned a lot just from her in my own journey, but, you know, referring that off to other families that I think, you know, it's going to do a world of justice, whether they're looking to have me come in and help them organize or whether or not they're looking for more of, let's do some more research. But one of the big, it doesn't matter where you're getting your information, research, research, research. Don't just jump in, make sure you're finding some information. Even use organizers. If you're not looking for them in person, contact them, ask them questions, because a good organizer is going to be able to, if you ask a question and you're looking for something, they're going to be able to give you a resource, or they should be willing to help give you a resource, whether or not you're working together or not, in order to get you to the next level.
I think it's the sharing of information too, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, they might not work with you. And certainly I've had lots of people contact me and say, oh, I'm looking for this, that, and the other, and I'll send them a resource. We don't necessarily end up working together, but you know, I'm not into that idea of like, I'll only give you information if we work together. I think I think it sort of defeats the purpose.
It does. Yeah.
And I just think when a family is reaching out to someone like yourself or myself or whatever, they're in a desperate state. They're not coming to us because life is wonderful. They're coming to us because something isn't working and they want help. And I think when people ask for help, there's nothing to be done other than to provide it in some way, shape, or form. And if you just send a quick, you know, they've sent you an email and a quick response of like, hey, check out this person because they're really great. And maybe they'll come back to you for something else. But, you know, I love the idea of sharing it just because we're good human beings.
Exactly. You know, and that's the only way, you know, that sharing of resources and sharing of information is actually going to do any benefit. There's no point if it's sitting on your website and you're not sharing it with anybody, right? It doesn't help anybody.
And Google is a wonderful thing, but man, can you go down rabbit holes? And so it's so much easier when you have someone who can say, okay, stop the rabbit holing and just go over here. So agreed. Denise, where can people learn more about you and what you do?
Well, they can reach me at my website, which is organizedmd.ca. And there, I mean, I've got a little bit of resources. I've got a few things, but always a conversation. I'm always open to, you know, if you have questions, contact me directly, because I like to specify my, you know, recommendations or comments or anything to their specific needs. So, you know, anytime I get clients calling, like you say, just to ask a question. And it's not necessarily to work. And I can just give you some information, being more direct and pinpointing you to more resources that will help you with your individual needs.
That's great. Thank you so much for the conversation today. I'm going to go look at a couple of things. I'm going to see if I can reorganize where the shoes go when we come home after school. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are looking for help and support in creating a roadmap to success for your child through challenging times, contact me at access2education.com. I work with all families to help them build power and knowledge in understanding their child's needs and how to build success through advocacy. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at access2education Toronto. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so together we can create your roadmap to success.